Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Miracle of Our Universe, a new view of consciousness, God, science, and reality, by Bernard Haish and Marcia Sims, narrated by Kyle Snyder. Preface. This book is written as a joint effort by astrophysicist Bernard Haish and his longtime wife, Marcia Sims. After he retired from a long career at the forefront of scientific research, Bernard was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, which made it difficult for him to write or type. So Marcia stepped in to act as his co-author and scribe, and managed to turn a manuscript into a book. She also introduced important new ideas. Throughout, however, the two have worked as a team to express the beliefs they have developed and shared over a lifetime. In this book, Bernard and Marcia have chosen to refer to God as He, but of course the consciousness they describe is formless, genderless, non-binary, and asexual. It's only the idiosyncrasies of the English language that require them to choose a pronoun when referring to Him. Introduction. A cosmic simulation. I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything that we talk about, everything that we regard as existing, postulates consciousness. Max Planck. Have you ever wondered why and how the world around you came to exist? Have you ever asked yourself whether there may be an afterlife awaiting you after your physical body dies? Could there actually be a God and a heaven of some sort? The hypothesis we present in this book is that our seemingly physical universe of matter and energy is a cosmic simulation, a virtual reality, that is brought into existence by the thoughts of a universal consciousness that is vast beyond our wildest imaginations, perhaps even infinite and eternal. We call this consciousness God or Creator. So, why would a universal consciousness create a virtual universe? Could it be to evolve itself through the free will exercised by the beings that inhabit that universe? Perhaps to create experiences for itself? In this virtual universe, literally everything is consciousness in action. We and other creatures are the offspring of this universal consciousness, and our role is to be its eyes and ears. In this universe, nothing is ever what it seems to be. Just like the virtual simulations in a video game, where each player chooses an avatar from a wide range of characteristics and abilities to use during the course of the game, these avatars interact with each other and the environment, while a game master acts as the organizer, officiant, arbitrator, and moderator. In our view of the universe as a cosmic simulation, God acts as game master. We are the avatars. As we act out our lives' dramas, we are activated, not by electronics, but rather by the consciousness of God, who experiences whatever we may be experiencing. In a sense, our experiences are thus His own. In the beginning was the Logos. We read in John chapter 1, verse 1. And the Logos was with God, and the Logos was God. Logos is a Greek word that means the expression of a thought. There are many subtle different usages of the word, but its interpretation as an expression of a thought is particularly relevant for the God model. We propose a model of God that starts with the premises that, at first, there was nothing. Then all things began when the Logos, the Word, appeared. The Logos is God, and the Logos is love. God, who is an infinite eternal consciousness and spirit, created the universe with the energy of love, which is not just a warm, fuzzy feeling, but actually a powerful force. Then God created a virtual universe of what seems like physical matter, energy, and time, booting up that simulation with a phenomenon called the Big Bang, which gave birth to light composed of photons and other particles, which in turn generated a vast field of electromagnetic energy, zero-point energy, or ZPE, which is ubiquitous and infinite throughout the universe. Galaxies were formed out of immense clouds of gas that collapsed and rotated. As they evolved, stars formed within them. Massive glowing bodies of gas that emit vast quantities of light and whose temperatures range from thousands of degrees at their surface to millions of degrees at their core. Our star is the Sun, inside of which roughly a million Earths could fit. After billions of years, most stars merged into galaxies, like our Milky Way, which contains approximately 100 billion stars. The Hubble Space Telescope and the more recent NASA James Webb Telescope have done deep field imaging of galaxies from which it can be inferred that there are an unimaginable 200 billion trillion stars in the observable universe. Astronomer Edwin Hubble discovered in the 1920s that the entire universe is expanding, which leads to a mind-boggling conclusion. If we plot a representative sample of expanding galaxies, say a few thousand, not a billion, the data show that space is expanding. But if we plot this data backward, it leads to a scenario in which these innumerable star-filled galaxies are actually hyper-compressed into a point in space having infinite density. And as we reach farther and farther back in time, as we approach time, t equals zero, everything comes to a grinding halt. Here, reality becomes merely a virtual tableau in a timeless realm. And it is from this nothingness, the Ein Sof, that God came forth. The simulation hypothesis. The idea that what we call reality is actually a super sophisticated video game, a concept made popular by Rizwan Virk in his book, The Simulation Hypothesis, raises the fundamental question of whether we are all actually characters existing inside a simulated reality that is so well rendered that we cannot distinguish it from physical reality. Consider your favorite armchair. It feels solid and stable while you're sitting in it, yet it is anything but solid. After all, it is composed of atoms. You may recall from your science classes that an atom is often depicted as a miniature solar system with electrons orbiting a nucleus. Most of it is empty space. But according to quantum mechanics, the picture is somewhat more abstract. The electron has a form that can only be described as a cloud of probability, not an orbiting particle. According to science writer Anne-Marie Helmenstein, an electron cloud is the region of negative charge surrounding an atomic nucleus that is associated with an atomic orbital. It is defined mathematically, describing a region with a high probability of containing electrons. The phrase electron cloud first came into use around 1925, when Erwin Schrödinger and Werner Heisenberg sought a way to describe the uncertainty of the position of electrons in an atom. So, when you are sitting in your favorite armchair, you are actually being supported by clouds of probability. Seems a bit precarious. But this is how it is in the world of atoms. And the same applies to all other apparently solid physical matter. But probabilities are numbers. So when you sit in your armchair, you are actually demonstrating how matter and number interact with each other. In this book, we develop the idea that a matter-based universe can be replaced by a number-based universe, and this is what leads us to the likelihood that reality is a simulation. A simulation interpretation of reality is backed up by the fact that atomic particles, like electrons, are seen as not even existing until they are measured. Experiments in quantum physics are strengthening the evidence that what we perceive as physical reality only becomes real when observed. As British cosmologist and astrophysicist Martin Rees pointed out, in the beginning, there were only probabilities. The universe could only come into existence if someone observed it. It does not matter that the observers turned up several billion years later. The universe exists because we are aware of it. This is called the measurement problem in quantum physics. A problem that leads to conclusions that, to most, are bizarre to the nth degree. How is it possible that, If you cut open your armchair and take some kind of measurement of a few electrons inside, never mind what kind of measurement, those electrons will be promoted into existence by virtue of their being measured, while gazillions of other electrons are left to languish in a cloud of probability. If we try to explain this behavior with real, solid, permanent particles, we can't. But if the world is a simulation, anything goes. The power of modeling. In fact, if we accept the possibility of matter and numbers interacting with each other, we can develop a mathematical model that becomes an ever better simulation of reality. This is an especially useful approach when studying problems in cosmology, as shown by Stephen Hawking and Leonard Mlodinow in their work, The Grand Design, in which a mathematical model becomes ever more realistic and valuable. Here is an example. Picture a test aircraft in a wind tunnel. Note all of the various responses it has as conditions are varied and test results are charted. This process can be a very useful way to study how a real aircraft will behave in actual flight. In the same way, an ever more complicated mathematical model of the universe can also be developed so that it becomes an ever better simulation of reality. Indeed, as physicist and astronomer James Jeans observed, as mathematical models of the universe become more refined, it begins to appear that the universe was designed by a pure mathematician. This book takes a similar approach. Here, we present a model of God, of the creation of the universe, and of our purpose in life. We call this the God model, and believe that it represents a model of God, the universe, and reality that is compatible with 21st century science, a model that is worth believing in. Throughout this book, we will address important questions about life and reality, including: what kind of being could God be? What is our relationship to God? Could there be more than one God? Where could God have come from? How does the Big Bang Theory figure into this? Is there an afterlife, and what could it look like? What is the purpose of life? Is consciousness all there is? Is the universe a virtual reality? Why is hell impossible? How can we reconcile a belief in an all-powerful personal God with the discoveries being made in modern science? These are pretty audacious questions, to be sure. That's why we approach them in terms of developing a model, one that is self-consistent and convincing. Introduction to the God Model. There are a number of non-religious belief systems that question both the existence and the nature of God, from atheists who don't believe in a divine being, to agnostics who deny we can ever know anything about the creation of the universe, to deists who believe that, while God created the universe, its actions are determined by inalterable laws. But the God that we present in this book is a model that even a die-hard atheist can find worthy of serious consideration. The God of our model does not hurl lightning bolts or care one way or the other whether or not we believe in him, or her, during our life on Earth. The God of our model is endlessly tolerant and infinitely loving. We can't really offend him no matter how hard we try. He loves us. This view of God as consciousness has important implications. God requires us in order to know himself. Thus, we have a fairly important role to play in the overall scheme of things. But who are we to make such audacious claims? And why should you believe a word of what we have to say? The answer is that you should not believe anything we say. Rather, we ask that you suspend your judgment on these all-important questions until we have laid out our case, the discoveries of science, the ancient wisdom of the religions of the world, and the mystical insights of thinkers who have come before us. Then ask a different question. Does this all hang together? Does it make more sense than any other alternative? Is it more rational than what you have been taught to believe? We maintain that logic, science, religion, and ancient wisdom, what Aldous Huxley called the perennial philosophy can be combined today to yield some powerful arguments about what God and heaven and hell cannot be. And although knowing what something cannot be is not as good as knowing what something actually is, it's still a good place to start. We hope you'll find our model convincing, or at least give it serious consideration. And keep in mind what biblical scholar Bart Ehrman warned. The search for truth takes you where the evidence leads you, even if, at first, you don't want to go there. Chapter 1. Near-death experiences. Everyone who is seriously involved in the pursuit of science becomes convinced that a spirit is manifest in the laws of the universe. Albert Einstein. Mystical experiences have been reported throughout human history, but it is only in recent years that medical tools and practices have been put to use to gather data about them. One of the most common of these is near-death experiences. Reports on these experiences, called NDEs, can be found going back at least to the Roman Empire. Throughout the ages, mystics and visionaries have reported similar experiences, and there is now ample evidence to claim that NDEs have earned the right to be recognized as worthy of study alongside more traditional fields like botany or anthropology. Indeed, today there is a growing awareness among doctors and scientists of the reality of near-death phenomena and a growing willingness to research and discuss them. Many great discoveries have been glibly asserted to have changed everything. But in the case of research into near-death experiences, this is undoubtedly true. In his pioneering 1975 book, Life After Life, philosopher and psychiatrist Raymond Moody investigated and defined near-death experiences, and thereby opened up a whole new dialogue about the possibility of an afterlife. Likewise, psychologist Kenneth Ring has identified and explored a consistent set of value and belief changes associated with people who have had near-death experiences. Kenneth Ring, PhD in social psychology, University of Connecticut, co-founder of the International Association for Near-Death Studies, IANDS. Among these changes, he found a greater appreciation for life, higher self-esteem, greater compassion for others, less concern for acquiring material wealth, a heightened sense of purpose and self-understanding, a desire to learn, elevated spirituality, greater ecological sensitivity and planetary concern, and a feeling of being more intuitive. There are now hundreds of books and many thousands of interviews illuminating near-death experiences. They appear to reveal visions of a spiritual world open to the experiencer, but invisible to others in attendance. And there is a marked similarity between these many reports. Those who have experienced NDEs report sensations of floating out of their unconscious bodies and seeing themselves perhaps on an operating table, perhaps at an accident scene, perhaps in bed at home or at a hospice, from a position above where their bodies lie. They describe amazing life reviews, in which all the tiny details of their physical lives flash by and are examined. Time races by and yet seems to stand still. But most important, they report an intense feeling of homecoming, of returning at last to a long-forgotten place. Their earthly lives start to fade away as if they were waking from a dream. They report encountering their true spiritual selves, which consist of many previous lives. Most noteworthy of these sensations is that of returning to a true spiritual home and feeling that everything is more real than real. We take these reports seriously. Pioneers in NDE research. American psychiatrist George Ritchie had a near-death experience at age 20 when he was pronounced dead twice by a doctor. In the 9 minutes during which he was claimed to be dead, he experienced many realms of heaven, passed through several dimensions of time and space, and had a vision of Jesus Christ. He reported his experiences in his best-selling book, Return from Tomorrow, 1978. In fact, it was Ritchie's experience that inspired Raymond Moody to write his landmark book, Life After Life, in which he coined the term near-death experience. This book opened the door to scientific investigation of spiritual realms. Moody went on to document over 150 case studies of people who were revived or spontaneously came back to life after being pronounced medically dead for several minutes. Moody's work prompted a stream of books, articles, films, and organizations that focused on near-death phenomena. From 1975 to 2000, almost 3,500 reports were investigated. There is now a veritable flood of first-hand accounts by people who have experienced another realm of existence. Reliable estimates are hard to find, but it is now believed that roughly 1 in 10 people who come close to dying has a near-death experience. Another important pioneer in NDE research was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, a Swiss-American psychiatrist whose 1969 book, On Death and Dying, explored what the dying have to teach doctors, nurses, clergy, and their own families. It was here that she first discussed her theory of the 5 stages of grief. Kubler-Ross's work was then reinforced by the research of psychiatrist and neurobehavioralist Bruce Grayson, who has studied near-death experiences for more than 45 years. Grayson has become one of the world's leading experts on the science and significance of these phenomena. Dutch cardiologist Pim van Lommel became intrigued by the number of his heart attack patients who reported near-death experiences, so he designed a research study that lasted over 20 years. In 2001, Lommel and his collaborators published their results in the prestigious medical journal The Lancet. Their work was hailed as the first scientifically rigorous study of NDEs. In fact, a growing number of doctors have written about their own near-death experiences. In her book, To Heaven and Back, a doctor's extraordinary account of her death, heaven, angels, and life again, orthopedic surgeon Mary Niels tells of a kayaking accident in South America that took her to heaven and back. Her book became a New York Times bestseller with over 1 million copies sold. While on holiday in southern Chile, Neil was trapped underwater in the powerful flow of a waterfall and the currents around it for 12 minutes. Before the medical team sent to rescue her was able to resuscitate her, she saw visions of heaven and angels. By the time she was resuscitated, she had gone without oxygen for over half an hour. This near disaster transformed her life and redefined the strength of her faith. From the combined report of these researchers, we can begin to define the shared characteristics of near-death experiences. These include an awareness of being dead, a sense of peace, well-being, and removal from the world, positive emotions, perceptions of the body from an outside vantage point with 360-degree vision, the ability to see and hear the activity of a medical team delivering care, moving into and through a dark tunnel with a brilliant light at the end, immersion in a powerful being of light who communicates telepathically, intense feelings of unconditional love and acceptance, a minutely detailed life review that compresses years into seconds, entering a realm of sights and sounds of incredible, unearthly beauty, sensing an overwhelming presence of love and extreme peacefulness, meeting long-lost friends and relatives, perceiving everything as more real and familiar than life on Earth, a feeling that we are connected to all that is, coming to a boundary where a choice must be made about whether to stay or return to Earth, feeling a greater appreciation for life, higher self-esteem, greater compassion for others, and less concern for acquiring material wealth, a heightened sense of purpose and self-understanding, elevated spirituality, greater ecological sensitivity, and increased planetary concern. And for some, a near-death experience is like a trip to heaven and a reminder of who they truly are. Voices from the Edge. People often describe the profound effect that near-death experiences have on them, causing them to re-examine their lives and morals. One doctor tells of his patient's experience following an automobile accident that left him in a coma. While in this state, he had a vivid sensation of leaving his physical body and entering into darkness. He reports having the feeling of moving up through a dark tunnel toward a point of light. Suddenly, a being, filled with love and light, appeared to him and guided him through a life review. He felt bathed in love and compassion as he reviewed the moral choices he had made in his lifetime. He suddenly understood that he was an important part of the universe and that his life had a purpose. Some who approach the boundary of death and return tell of traveling through walls to a waiting room where they see their relatives and friends. One patient reported traveling through a wall and seeing her young daughter wearing mismatched plaids, which was highly unusual for her. Another woman traveled through a wall and overheard her brother-in-law in the hospital waiting room talking to a business associate in a very derogatory manner, a conversation she was able to repeat back to him later. One of the most dramatic experiences was reported by neurosurgeon Eben Alexander. In his best-selling book, Proof of Heaven, Alexander recounts his own descent into a deep coma due to bacterial meningitis from a vicious strain of E. coli. Doctors estimated his chance for recovery at less than 10% at the outset, then less than 2% after a week in a comatose state. Even if he were to come out of this coma, they predicted, he would spend the rest of his life in a nursing home. The neocortex of his brain had completely shut down, and he was effectively dead. He had no functioning brain. Yet, instead of dying, Alexander spontaneously emerged from his coma after 8 days, and with an amazing story to tell. In describing his experience while near death, he said, "I believe we are on the greatest revelation in human thought in all of recorded history, a true synthesis of science and spirituality." His observations supercharged interest in NDE phenomena. Prior to his own experience, Alexander had thought of himself as a scientific skeptic, one who casually dismissed accounts by his patients of NDEs. But after his own experience, he declared, "Like many other scientific skeptics, I refuse to even review the data relevant to the questions concerning these phenomena. I prejudge the data, and those providing it, because my limited perspective failed to provide the foggiest notion of how such things might actually happen. But those who assert that there is no evidence for phenomena indicative of extended consciousness, in spite of overwhelming evidence to the contrary, are willfully ignorant. They believe they know the truth without needing to look at the facts." Alexander studied his own medical charts and came to the conclusion that he had been in such a deep coma during his own NDE, and his brain had been so completely shut down, that the only way to explain what he felt and saw was that his soul had indeed detached from his body and gone to another dimension. His experience led him to believe that angels, God, and the afterlife were all as real as could be. By contrast, Alexander lamented, current neuroscientific hypotheses about the possible biochemical nature of memory and consciousness are all over the map, with nothing even remotely resembling a consensus in sight. He ended by formulating a new approach to consciousness. "My new view, that is emerging in neuroscience and philosophy of mind, is that soul/spirit exists and projects all of apparent physical reality from within itself. The brain is more a prison from which our conscious awareness is liberated at the time of bodily death, enabling a robust afterlife that also involves reincarnation. Our choices matter tremendously, and thus free will is a crucial component." And this leads us to the foundational principle of the God model, an infinite and eternal consciousness that constructs what we perceive as reality. Chapter 2. Consciousness and Reality. Advances are made by answering questions. Discoveries are made by questioning answers. Bernard Haisch. Advances in scientific knowledge are now strengthening the evidence that reality takes place only when observed. This is called the measurement problem in quantum physics. Human bodies are made of cells, approximately 30 trillion of them. But our bodies replace their cells throughout our lifetimes. In fact, on average, each cell is destroyed and replaced by a new cell every 10 years. But from the point of view of consciousness, this raises a profound conundrum. Who are we?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?